Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. For every one person shot and killed in Chicago, five are shot and survive. The trauma of being shot can change everything. It can turn every stranger into a potential threat, make your own neighborhood feel unsafe, even literally change the way you think. So what does surviving look like without support? This is part two in our collaboration with the nonprofit news outlet, The Trace. Yesterday, we heard from Trace reporter Lakedra Chavis, who talked about what she's seen out in the field.
It's not just about people who have had, who have sort of been immediately impacted by gun violence. You know, it's about their family that is now helping them recover, their friends, you know, the first responders, the police officers, the witnesses to the shooting. All of those people are affected by this type of trauma, this really type of violent trauma that happens. And, you know, I think it's important to frame the issue that way, because suddenly, when you look at it from that perspective, you're talking about an epidemic in the city that affects tens of thousands of people. And, you know, I feel like the sort of urgency to addressing gun violence becomes even more heightened.
Now we're going to talk to survivors to hear in their own words what recovery looks like for them and how it has impacted their lives. On the line with us is Les Jenkins. He's a shooting survivor who works with the Institute for Nonviolence. That's a local nonprofit that tries to stop shootings and provide services to victims. Les, welcome to Reset.
Hello. How you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you for being here with us. Also with us is Natalie Manning. She's a mother of three children and a co-founder and executive director of This Is Life. That's a nonprofit organization that creates opportunities for young people to participate in the arts, with the goal of deterring them from violence. Natalie, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Natalie and Les, your lives were both touched by gun violence here in Chicago. I want to start with you, Natalie. What led you to start your nonprofit, This Is Life?
Well, my nonprofit, This Is Life, was founded 8 years ago with my youngest son here in the city of Chicago. But the gun violence didn't affect our family till maybe in 2018, where it actually my older son was actually shot here in the city of Chicago.
Wow. And so it was then that you realized that you wanted to do more?
Well, I had always was doing more in the community, but when this actually happened, I kind of was silent about it. I never, like, if you weren't a close family or a friend, nobody knew that that actually had happened to my family. I kept that to myself. I'm just like a kind of like a private person.
Yeah.
So I didn't like go on social media or go to anybody and tell anybody about it. It was just like if you were a close family or friend, you knew that the gun violence had actually happened.
So
to me.
Tell us more about the aftermath then. After your son was shot, how did that impact your family?
It had a major impact on my family, especially my daughter. She just actually told me about this maybe like a year or so ago, how it like had an impact on her, because the back and forth to the hospital with her older brother, and, you know, because it's something that we weren't used to. You know, you would hear about it, you would see it on the news, you would see it on social media, but to actually have it actually happen to your family, a family member, that kind of had a difficult kind of impact.
Les, I want to bring you in here. You survived a shooting in the late 80s. What can you share with us about that experience and the impact it's had on your life?
Well, I could say that, first of all, thanks for this opportunity to share with you as well as those that's listening. I can say that I was shocked. I was directly affected by the gun violence at such a young age. But during the time that I was affected, it was tragedy. I was directly affected by being shot in both of my legs. My daughter was in my arms. I was at the age of 17. I was told at that time, after leaving, making it to the hospital and making it into the recovery room, I was told that there was a possibility that I might never walk again. So I was directly affected by it to the point that, I mean, I like didn't really want to, I didn't want to go on with life
mm-hmm.
at that time. However, I'm thankful to God that my daughter didn't get hurt, and I had a loving family that helped me.
And you were able to walk again?
Yes, it took a little over 9 months, going into like close to a year, where I was able to start getting feelings back in, you know, through therapy and the miracle of God. I always want to say, you know, God, at one point who I was truly angry with because I didn't understand why this happened to me during this time. Because what they have going on right now, they didn't have back in the 80s.
What do you mean?
The different resources. Like the Institute of Nonviolence, what I look for, I mean, like they didn't have anyone coming to your hospitals and actually supporting you and your family.
We talked about the physical recovery for you, Les, of course, getting back on your feet again after being shot. What else did recovery look like for you and your family?
Well, I mean, when you talk about recovery, of course, socially, emotionally, financially, everything was a process because, I mean, trauma looks different in a lot of ways. And we were all traumatized by my physical injury. And so what that looked like at that time was, in the beginning, as I said before, it looked very hopeless. I mean, like, I had no feelings in my legs. I could not move. I felt very hopeless about moving forward in life. I mean, I had no desire, no motivation. So in the beginning, it was very traumatic for me. But because of the emotional support of my family, constantly speaking into my spirit and telling me not to give up, this is not the end. That motivated me to find some way to look at this reality in a different way. And at that time, I had no other choice but to begin to bury my current reality and try to find just a glimpse of hope.
Natalie, you also lost a student to gun violence when you were working at a charter school. How did that affect you and your school staff and student body?
That was like very emotional for everyone. She was just like a freshman at that time. And she was like one of my favorite students. We used to laugh and joke around all the time, and to receive that message, it was hard for everyone, for the students, for the staff. It was a difficult time.
How did you heal?
I mean, just pretty much comforting, talking to each other, encouraging each other, inspiring each other, doing like different things. Like they had like they offered time for the students to, you know, if they need time to gather themselves, to talk to various counselors, as well as just trying to comfort each other. And like we had like something like a memorial for her, and you know, kids were able to write on balloons and just like pretty much express themselves or say words of encouragement and things of that nature.
Les, when a person survives a shooting, a lot of people would assume you go to the ER, you get treatment, you go into recovery, but what does the public, and when I say that, I mean the media, city leaders, the police, what are we missing here?
I mean, I can't speak in regard to the police. I can't speak in regards to those different campaigns that you just spoke on. What I can speak into is what victim advocates is trying to bring to the forefront. And that's the continuing care of showing them how do healing look like. And sometimes healing look like us just being present and being able to assist them in their need. I mean, like with damages, more support, psychological support, emotional support, financial support. These type of things is what we assist them with in this critical time of recovery.
Les, you said you still talk with your daughter about that day and the fact that you almost lost her, right? She was in your arms as you were taking her to the store. Why is that important to you to keep that conversation going?
I mean, because it may have looked fearful in the beginning as it did to me. And I know how fear can sometimes stagnate you and traumatize you to the point that it don't want you to move past incidents that take place, but not to own up to every incident or every thing that happened to you. Everything that happened to you is not always directly because you caused it. So always changing the narrative is something that I plagued myself to always do to anyone that come across the same incident that I came to, becoming a victim of gun violence myself. If it wasn't, again, I would always say this, if it wasn't for a loving family that continued to pour into my spirit, that do not own this, do not take this as you brought this on yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what I always try to institute her when she asked those questions.
And thinking of family, I go back to you, Natalie. You went through this at home. You also went through it at school in an environment that's very difficult to handle a situation like this. I wonder how you explain to your students that the classmate they just saw every day is now dead while you're still processing it. And then you got to turn back to, all right, let's get back to learning.
It's, you know, it's a process, you know, and it's just like you always got to try to find ways to be creative, especially when you're dealing with youth, and try to find ways to allow them to express themselves. That's one thing that I've always been pretty good with, allowing young people to be able to express themselves and tell me how they're feeling, if they're feeling some type of way, if they need some extra time. That's always important, and always have a listening ear to hear, you know, what they have to say. And just, you know, you got to keep encouraging them, letting them know that it's going to be okay, but it's easier said than done. You just have to take one day at a time, and that's what I would always tell them.
Les, can you tell us more about your work with the Institute for Nonviolence?
Yes, I can. So what we do as victim advocates, I mean, we deal with three different things. We assist the families that's dealing with, obviously, as I was saying, that's impacted by gun violence. You know, what would be helpful? I mean, what would be helpful is to be able to have quicker access to the victim that's affected by the gun violence in partnership with the hospital. Because, I mean, like, what we deal with is helping them in the trauma, dealing with social, emotional trauma, physical trauma that they may be experiencing after they're released from the hospital. You know, we deal with, you know, that fortunately, some of them don't make it. So we also assist them with victim compensation. We also deal with relocation. We also deal with assisting them with bandages. We deal with assisting them with, like, housing. I mean, some of the things of this nature, this is what we assist them with.
Yeah.
So that they don't have to return right back to that same environment, that community that they've been plagued or traumatized by due to the gun violence.
Natalie, what kind of solutions would you like to see to deter gun violence in Chicago?
Well, like for myself, I'm currently working in the community, do a lot of things. I try to find things that I think might be interesting to help care the young, the gun violence with the youth. Like, I just did an adult versus youth basketball game, like various talent shows, virtual events with the families. You know, just basically finding resources and things that basically can occupy the youth time and, you know, to try to keep them off the streets. But to me, I feel like as you look and you see on the news, they're getting younger and younger, so it's just like, we have to continue to find ways to be of influence of the younger generation as they're coming up so we can try to curb this violence. Because to me, it's just like every time you turn around or you look on the news, someone is being shot. And you shouldn't have a fear or want to live in fear that you may get shot if you just, you know, minding your own business. So just basically like finding solutions and ways and to occupy the young people. That's what I think.
Les, what do you think people get wrong about gun violence in Chicago? Because it's interesting. There's definitely a narrative out there across the country and across the world about the violence here in this city. I have family in other countries, and I know some folks were concerned for me taking a job in Chicago just because of what they had heard nationally on the news. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, like when you talk about gun violence, I don't want to keep ignoring. There's there's a lot of different there's a lot of different things, ways we can look at this. You know, violence is not just plagued by, you know, someone picking up a gun and just using it. You know, I mean, like it's initiated from something, right? So you want to probably look at the addressing the needs of poverty, the lack of resources, the lack of education. You know, I mean, all these things are motivated. Violence is motivated from something. You know, I always like to talk about the social, emotional, and physical needs. And when these things are not met, they sometimes drive on the need to survive. And sometimes a lot of people use that as an outlet to victimize other people through the violence. And these are some of the things that's in our community, such as guns.
Mm-hmm.
If you look today, it's a lot of carjacking, a lot of robbing. You know, this is all still dealing with violence. Violence is tend to hurt and harm or damage or possibly kill someone. So, I mean, like, we can look at it in a lot of ways. But we need a lot of help right now.
Let's hear from a caller who wants to join the conversation. Susan's on the line in Evanston. Hi, Susan. Welcome to Reset.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here. I'm with an organization in Evanston called Kurt's Cafe, and at the beginning of the summer, we had two very violent murders right on a block that a lot of kids do frequent. And we got together nine organizations that work with youth. We came up with an aggressive plan. We worked really hard to keep youth busy every single night of the week and all weekends, doing things like community centers and things like that, put it all together in 2 weeks' time. And happy to report at the end of the summer, we've had no shootings and we've had no youth arrests. So I know Evanston is much smaller than Chicago, and we're very, very focused. But pulling all of our organizations together, I think, was the answer to our challenge, is working together on an issue.
Thank you for sharing that, Susan. We appreciate your call. What do you want city leaders like Mayor Lightfoot and Superintendent Brown, Natalie, what do you want them to know about how gun violence is impacting our region?
I think they need to listen to the youth. I think they need to listen to the perpetrators, the people that's actually out here that's been a part of the gun violence. I think that's the issue. They're not listening to the people who have been a part of it or have been affected by it. They're not listening. And I think those are the people that you need to be listening to and talking to. I know it's kind of hard sometimes when with gun victims, they don't want to tell who, you know, actually retaliated or whatever the case may be. But I just think they just really need to try to get out here and find people that would be willing to be open and talk to them exactly about what's going on, because they have the actual inside.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they can pretty much go from there and try to come up with some solutions. That's just my personal opinion about it.
I'll give the last word to you, Les. What do you want to say to the mayor and the police superintendent? What should they know about how gun violence is really affecting us here in Chicago?
Thank you. Thank you for that. But I would like for the mayor to understand that, you know, I think we need more partners like the Institute of Nonviolence. I think we need more agencies like us. And I think we need to be able to have more freeable access to be looked at as a partner for helping the violence versus a critic of the violence or a perpetrator ourselves of the violence, because we're not. We're from these communities. We love our communities, and we don't like what's going on. And a lot of us have vowed to dedicate our lives to helping this. So I would like to bring more into our communities, such as more, you know, recreational centers. Open up these schools back. I would like for them to put more mental health services back into the community. It's so much they can assist us with as we continue to attack the war on violence. If they could just hear the cry of the different agencies that lives out here 24 hours a day trying to prevent violence from reoccurring.
From our caller Susan in Evanston to the far south side, we asked you how your neighborhood has been impacted by gun violence, and one resident told us on Instagram that in her far south side community, gun violence impacts them almost weekly. We have been speaking with Les Jenkins. He's a shooting survivor who works with the Institute for Nonviolence. And also with us, Natalie Manning. She's co-founder and executive director of This Is Life. Les and Natalie, thank you very much. That's it for today's Reset podcast. Tomorrow, we will hear from experts on the forefront of treating and helping survivors get the resources they need.
So many of our young people run the risk of developing post-traumatic stress disorder after being shot. And in young men in particular, that's manifest as aggression.
Yeah.
And so often people, you know, look at a young man and say, oh, that's that bad kid who got shot. And look how he's always so angry and stuff. And that's actually a psychiatric sign and symptom that he's demonstrating, saying he needs help.
Come right back here for that conversation. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for joining us. We'll meet again tomorrow.
Have you ever wondered why anyone drinks Malort? Or if there are actually lobsters in the Chicago River? Then listen to the Curious City podcast, where we answer all your questions about Chicago and the region. WBEZ's Curious City is part of the NPR network and available wherever you find your podcasts.